Welcome back. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Now, hopefully, joining us now is my second hour guest, Catherine Smith from New Zealand, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine editor. Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I am, Vinny. How are you?
I'm fabulous now that you're here.
Oh, that's good. Wonderful.
Yep. Well, okay, could you just tell people a little bit about yourself, just kind of preface yourself, because we're going to be talking about vaccines today, and when you talk anything medical, ultimately the best thing to do, I think, is to preface the conversation by saying, I have credibility because of such and such and such.
Okay. Well, where do I start? I'm a trained herbalist, although I'm not now in practice. I've been the editor of the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine for a year. In terms of my background on vaccination, I've had a sort of personal and professional interest in it for over 20 years. I've got a daughter of 20 years, and my interest in vaccination started when I was pregnant and read a very interesting article in the copy of Nexus magazine. The article was written by Vera Scheidner and was relating stress from vaccination to disruptions in infant breathing patterns and increased risk of sudden infant death. So that was sort of my introduction to the fact that vaccinations are not, quote-unquote, safe and effective as they're usually promoted. And from then, I researched the topic further and we made a decision, my husband and I, not to vaccinate our daughter, against a lot of pressure, I might add, because my husband's father was a doctor and was very keen on vaccination. And further to that, when our daughter was three, I began to train as a herbalist. And I was in practice for 10 years part-time. I sort of fitted in around other work, various activism, homeschooling, writing books. I wrote a book on cancer prevention, and that looks... for example, at the contribution, or at least some of the contribution of vaccines as a cause of cancer. And I also treated vaccine-injured children, and once you've treated vaccine-injured children, it's very hard to feel sanguine about, the safety or even efficacy of vaccines. So, yes, personal and professional interest in this subject for over 20 years. Most recently, I've started an organisation in New Zealand called No Forced Vaccines. I started that towards the beginning of 2011.
That's noforcevaccines.org, the website, isn't it?
That's right. And the purpose of that is to resist current moves within some members of the government to change from a vaccination policy which respects individual rights to choose whether or not they want to be vaccinated to one that to coerce parents to vaccinating their children.
So yeah, there's two things. The two things that gave me the impetus to bring you on today, Kath, is some two recent news items. Number one was a news item by John Campbell. Campbell Live is like the what would you say? Sort of like a wussier, more gay Walter Cronkite. And of New Zealand, and they had this these two people debating. Okay, basically, it was two people in the office. One was adamantly for vaccination. One was adamantly against it. And of course, the only professional that they had commenting was very, very pro-vaccine. When the anti-vaccine lady asked him, "Are there any side effects of any kind?" And with a big smile, and I'm a salesman, so I recognize this smile. It's not a real one. He says, no, there's absolutely no problem. It's all fine. There's been wonderful trials, and it's so proven, and it's efficacious. And it's almost like the man was about to spit in his own face with his own tongue or something. It was unbelievable. It was scary. Like there was some kind of vaccinated demonic possession going on here. There was that propaganda piece by the mainstream media. And secondly, which is what happened last night, which is what I called you instantly while the story was even running. I didn't even wait for it to finish. Because I was like, get Kath on the line. Was that they are now going to allow children to be in charge of whether or not they get vaccinated against, even if it's against their parents' will. And they can even do it without even informing their parents. So this was the most horrifying, scariest thing that I saw on television last night. It was oh my god. What are the ramifications of all of this, Kath? Kath, are you there? We seem to be having a problem with the phone line. So, Kath, if you would just want to hang up and call back in, just the same number again, we'll bring you up there because we just have a little bit of a problem with the phones at present. So just hang up and ring on back. Because I wanted to talk a little bit about this sort of thing because I know a lot of people who don't really know that much about vaccines, but they're concerned and they want to know. It's just the fact that they don't know about it as yet. And in my opinion, when you start to inform people about these things, it's quite shocking for them, particularly because you're essentially going toe-to-toe with medical establishment propaganda that's been supplanted in their minds for quite a few years. If they've had it repeated over and over and again, vaccines are safe, vaccines are effective, get your jab, they're free, this, that, and the other. It's like they're trying against so much reality. Like, literally, vaccine pushers are against the interpretation of reality. That's my ultimate conclusion. But I don't care about reality. Now, secondly, not only do they not care about reality, but they don't care about the damage that their drugs and vaccines and what have you actually do. They don't care. They want you dead. Quite literally. And they've admitted it. And they do things deliberately to make sure that the vaccines hurt and kill you. And I'm not joking. If anybody is a medical doctor or a nurse or a frontline staff member or something, this affects you too. Okay? You go on YouTube and you search for cancer viruses in the vaccines. And you will most likely come up with a BBC video. That's the British Broadcasting Corporation. If the credibility isn't enough for you, saying that, yes, we put cancer viruses in the vaccine and laughing about it. Okay? That's what we really have to comprehend when we talk about this, is that they not only deliberately put cancer-causing viruses in the vaccines, but they think it's funny. Kath is back. Kath, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Okay. You all right? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Good. Okay, I can hear you fine.
All right. Where did we leave off with you coming off there? Because I was just talking about how the vaccine industry deliberately add things in to, you know, take on you. But I wanted to get into the children being able to consent themselves to taking the vaccines in New Zealand.
Well, that's right. You were discussing an item you saw on the TV3. News network last night, and I didn't actually see it myself because our television's broken and we're not planning to replace it, but I did look on the TV3 website and I read the story associated with the broadcast. And we're not actually talking about something that's happening or could happen in the future in New Zealand. We're talking about something that's actually happening now. We, in New Zealand, we have a public health system which has set targets for vaccination. If for the 0 to 2 year age group, for example, they have set a target for 95% of children to be fully vaccinated. And they've talked about setting a target for older children. Whether or not that has actually been set, I don't know yet.
It's very scary, the language they use. They're targeting children for vaccination.
Yes. Well, it is a bit like that. I mean, there's a very good book on vaccination, which is another one of my sort of early influences in terms of credible evidence that shows that vaccination can cause harm, and it's called A Shot in the Dark. And it's written by Harris Coulter, who's a medical historian, and a woman whose name escapes me just right now, which is unfortunate. But she started a very good organisation, which probably all your US listeners will probably already be familiar with, which is the National Vaccine Information Centre. And she started it together with other parents whose children had had adverse reactions to the old DPT, or diphtheria pertussis, which is whooping cough, and the tetanus shot. Her son had an adverse reaction and ended up somewhat disabled from it. And so that was the sort of impetus for starting this organisation, and it provides a very good service from its website. I think it's nvic.org. In terms of giving parents information so that they can make a more informed choice about vaccination. And it also provides a sort of advocacy role to allow parents to continue to be able to make an informed choice about vaccination, because everybody in the US knows that you can't get your children into school in the US, if you want them to go to school, that is, or you need them to go to school because you need the childcare. Unless they are either vaccinated or you've got an exemption from them being vaccinated. And what is happening in the US is probably not news to people in the US, is that there have been a number of initiatives designed to sort of roll back the exemptions, if you like. They're first of all targeting philosophical exemptions for vaccination. Parents in Vermont at the moment are fighting very hard to retain their rights to decide that they don't want to have their child vaccinated, not to have to justify it because of family medical or history or anything, simply to say, no, he or she is my child and I don't want to have him or her being exposed to the risks of any vaccine.
Well, that's the interesting thing, Kath. Because you're talking about the risks associated with vaccines, and yet on Campbell Live, which goes out to, you know, it's a huge fracking news program, which everybody trusts and whatever, and the guy says there's absolutely no chance of any bad reaction whatsoever. Well, he obviously didn't read out the vaccination sheet from Blimmin' MedSafe, which says that there's certain amounts of reactions and what have.
That's right. I mean, you know, he's either delusional, or, you know, he's telling porkies on purpose. You know, I didn't see it, so I've got no way of judging, you know, whether or not he's being intentionally dishonest or whether he's just completely ignorant, has never bothered to read a manufacturer's data sheet for a vaccine in his life. Has anybody
Trust me, Kath.
Sorry, what?
I was just going to say, trust me. I'm a former salesman, and I can see my own ilk. That guy was selling something. And you know when people are telling you that something's completely safe and they say that there's no risk of any kind? I've said that to people many times as well, and it's not necessarily been the case.
Right.
And I did it with a big smile on my face and a very happy tone in my voice, just like that guy did too. So I would venture a wild jab in the dark, so to speak, that this guy is not only on the take, but he loves it.
Right. Well, I mean, but anyway, that's my assumption. It is sad that there is not enough knowledge about vaccination in the community of journalists in general. Otherwise, people like him would not be able to get away with making, frankly, erroneous statements like that. You know, if Campbell, the host of the show, had been properly prepared and wanted to, you know, have a sort of show that gave people enough information to make an informed choice, he would have read the manufacturer's data sheet on the MedSafe website for some flu vaccines, and then he would have pulled the guy up at that point and said, but, you know, hang on, the manufacturer of this brand of vaccine says, well, it can cause X, Y, and Z side effects. What are you talking about? Don't you think that it's deceptive to say to the public that there are no risks from being vaccinated when the manufacturers of the vaccines admit that, you know, there's the risks of, you know, certain conditions occurring after vaccination? But, you know, as I said, that hasn't happened. And I've got to say that that is actually, unfortunately, typical of that particular host. He had a woman called Dr. Nikki Turner. She is a medical doctor in New Zealand, and she is the spokesperson for an organisation called the Immunisation Advisory Centre, or IMAC for short, which purports to be a source of independent information about vaccines, but has in the past acknowledged vaccine companies as sponsors on its website. It took them down, actually, after my husband and I went on National Māori Radio here in New Zealand and pointed out that, you know, this organisation that's purporting to provide independent, quote-unquote, information about the risks and benefits of vaccines has, you know, acknowledged vaccine companies as sponsors. It doesn't look too good, really, does it? So they took that down, but, you know, the point is notwithstanding that when Dr. Nikki Turner appeared on the Campbell Show probably around about a year ago speaking about measles, she made a number of points which would easily be demonstrably false, and he should have been pulled up on by the host of the show if he had, you know, read the data sheet for the vaccine, or sort of done any sort of background reading on either sort of measles, the disease, or
journalism's dead. Kath, it really is. I'm not going to be able to unmute you, so you're going to have to hang up and ring back again, Kath, and we'll come back from break in about 4 minutes. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen.
My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and we'll respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print $100.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about commercial slavery. What do you get? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. On AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can join us in the chat room there if you go there. Hopefully, I'm not 100% sure how other people's computers see the websites that I've made. I mean, because I can only see them how my computer does. But anyway, top right-hand corner on my computer screen anyway is the chat room button at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. So please come in and join the other people in there if you have some questions about vaccines today or something of that nature. Please come on in. And also, if you would like to ring in, we have the capacity to take your calls with Kath as well in case you have any inquiries in that regard. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And if you are calling from New Zealand or overseas, the international calling number is 001. So that would be 001. 218-339-8525 for the international callers. Kath, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinnie.
Right. Now, where were we? We were talking about, I think something needs to be said about the paid misinformation of the pharmaceutical industries to push vaccines onto people. Would you be able to inform people a little bit about that?
Well, in New Zealand, it's quite interesting. As we were discussing, we have pharmaceutical companies providing sponsorship money to organisations such as the Immunisation Advisory Centre, which then purports to be independent. And but if you read any of their information materials, they push a very pro-vaccine line. And particularly the information that they prepare for parents usually omits a substantial proportion, in fact, some cases even most of the potential side effects of the vaccine. So, the vaccine companies don't tend to advertise directly to parents for those vaccines that are on the National Childhood Immunisation, quote-unquote, I just tend to call it the vaccination schedule. They have other agencies, sort of pushing their propaganda wagon for them, if you like. We also have a Ministry of Health where I know from making requests under the Official Information Act that there are staff in the Ministry of Health who have a significantly pro-vaccine agenda, and in fact that they are so pro-vaccine that they appear to be either incapable of reading the articles in the medical journals that they cite as references and drawing the appropriate conclusion, or they read them, ignore the conclusion of the article in the medical journal and write what they'd prefer people to think instead. A case in point is the Ministry of Health produces a useful book, actually, called The Immunisation Handbook, and it's designed as a handbook for doctors and practice nurses about vaccines and so-called vaccine-preventable diseases. It's got a lot of interesting information in it, and it discusses, each disease in turn, looks at sort of New Zealand epidemiology, looks at complications of the disease, which of course is a useful thing to know if you're a parent, you're going to make a decision on behalf of your child and not to get them vaccinated. You should know.
But now they can't do that. That anyway, because the kids can just go ahead anyway.
Well, yes, this is a new phenomenon in New Zealand. I mean, up until last night, at least as far as I was aware, parents' rights to make decisions for their minor children were being respected, and obviously that is no longer the case. It's very distressing, actually. I mean, I've got to say that it's not unexpected because, as your American listeners will know, they've been eroding the parental rights regarding their children's health care in America for some time. You've got, for example, in 2011, the governor of California, Jerry Brown, mandating not only the HPV vaccine, but also pushing through I'm not sure if it's a law or, what quite the appropriate legal term is for what he's done in the States, but essentially making it legal for children as young as 12 to be vaccinated against sexually transmitted conditions without their parents' consent. Of course, that includes HPV vaccines, the human papilloma virus vaccines such as Gardasil and Cervarix. And, of course, that also includes hepatitis B vaccine because hepatitis B can, in some cases, be communicated through sexual activity. We knew that was sort of an international trend that needed watching. What we didn't know in New Zealand was that there were people, preparing to run roughshod over parents' rights and start instigating similar policies here, essentially using social media like Facebook and Twitter to propagandize teenagers, including those who are underage in New Zealand.
I almost forgot that that was part of it, that that government agents are going to use Facebook and Twitter to find children that haven't been vaccinated and try to convince them to and to go get vaccinated without telling their parents.
That's right. I mean, we've had a situation in New Zealand where parents' rights regarding their children's healthcare have been generally respected, as I've said. There's been an important exception to that, and that has been in the matters of contraception and abortion. It's been perfectly legal, which I disagree with very strongly, for doctors to prescribe contraceptives, including, those like oral contraceptives and the contraceptive injection Depo-Provera, which can cause, blood clots and result in sudden death. Two girls who are under the age of 16, which, when you're 16 in New Zealand, you're allowed to make decisions about your own medical care, and you're also legally allowed to have sex. That's the age of consent in New Zealand. So any policy that allows doctors to prescribe contraceptives for children under 16 essentially facilitates paedophilia. And, further to that, you have a situation in New Zealand where girls under 16 are able to have abortions without their parents being consulted or consenting to the operation, which, of course, is incredibly dangerous given the risks of the procedure. In fact, there have been some shocking cases here in New Zealand. I know we're getting a bit off topic here, where the first time that parents have actually realised that their daughter was pregnant is when she's practically bleeding to death from a botched abortion. Done in a proper clinic, by the way. I'm not talking about backstreet abortions here. We're talking about, abortions that are carried out in illegally and in, what is supposed to be safe conditions. And, the poor girl has to be rushed to hospital before she dies. We've had that as a sort of a bone of contention, and parents have not been happy about that for years and years. But there hasn't been the political will to do anything about it, unfortunately, because I know that in the States where there have been initiatives which have made pregnancy in a minor a notifiable condition if a girl seeks an abortion, that has had some very good effects. It has actually discouraged underage girls from having sex. It has meant that if an underage girl gets pregnant because she's being sexually abused, it's more likely to be found out and the offender identified and the girl protected from further abuse. And, of course, it also meant that if teenage girls do end up having abortions, they at least have their parents' support, and their parents are able to know that the operation has taken place and to get the emergent medical care if there are any complications. But that's gone off topic. So back to the vaccination situation. Yes, until very recently, parents' choices regarding their children's vaccinations have been respected. Yes, now there are people who are paid to sit on social media websites and essentially solicit children for vaccination. And if, a child can be frightened into believing that they're going to get cervical cancer if they don't get an HPV vaccination, or that if they hadn't been vaccinated against the measles, they could get brain damage or die, and decide to be vaccinated, then they are going ahead in New Zealand and they are vaccinating children, according to this report from TV3 News. And that's incredibly dangerous for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, most teenagers don't have the cognitive maturity or the life experience to be able to make decisions about vaccination. They've got no idea, for example, if somebody's lying through their teeth, through a social media website, saying that there is, no side effects from the vaccine, or that, for example, that their parents were misinformed when they told the teenager that the reason they weren't vaccinated with the MMR vaccine is because of the link between the MMR vaccine and autism. Teenagers don't usually have the skills to be able to work out, where people are coming from with these agendas, or to find out the truth about claims that may be made by pro-vaccine advocates that may be completely untrue. That's sort of, you know, one of the risks, you know, in terms of, you know, the lack of maturity of the child. The second and very significant risk is that if somebody's just soliciting somebody to get vaccinated over a social media website, that person has no idea about the general state of health of the child. He has no idea, or she, about that child's personal medical history. For example, there is, you know, it's quite possible the reason that child wasn't vaccinated with MMR, for example, is because he or she had adverse reactions to previous vaccines in infancy or as a toddler, and the parents decided against further vaccines. They might not necessarily have shared that information with their child because they would not have seen the need to share information like that with a child who's too young to make their own medical decisions. And, of course, children may also be completely unaware of the fact that people with certain family histories may be more at risk of vaccine reactions than others. And they might not know their own family medical history, and if they do, they may not realize that it has relevance.
And that was something you mentioned, and I thought this was a very important part because I was listening to you on Vapi Kupinga's show on Radio Wātea. Hi, Vapi. We love you. And you were talking about how when they do the tests and the trials for vaccines, they ensure that nobody who has family history of illnesses or whatever that might potentially have a vaccine reaction, nobody who's even slightly unhealthy or anything like that. Like, they almost get basically a superhuman group of freaks who are certainly not representative of the general population's health to come in and do the vaccine trials.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously they want in vaccine trials to have data that makes a vaccine look as safe as possible, and the way to do that is to exclude people with adverse family histories or people who are already ill with certain conditions, or people who have had previous adverse reactions to other vaccines, and a whole host of other, you know, potential confounding factors, such as, you know, taking certain medications that might affect immune system response, et cetera, et cetera. So you're quite right. I mean, when you get, you know, information that comes out of a clinical trial of a vaccine that says, you know, X percentage get this side effect and X percentage get that side effect, and there were no serious side effects, it may be that the data is completely true and representative of what happened to that in that clinical trial. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's going to happen when you get out to the general population. And, in fact, I was reading recently that a large number of the people who've had adverse reactions to the HPV vaccine did have those family and personal history red flags that meant that they probably should never have been vaccinated in the first place because they're at significantly higher risk than the general population of having an adverse event. And, you know, unfortunately, because in, you know, the US as in New Zealand, there is such a strong push towards vaccination and, you know, there's a financial motive for you know, medical practices to offer vaccination. But are you right? I hear music.
Yeah, we'll come back after the break, Cass. So if you just hold on the line there, we'll bring you back up right after the break. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine is my guest. If you're in Europe, you can actually now buy a copy of that fabulous magazine, and we'll give you the details of that after the break.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder, incorporated, organized crime, the police and
welcome
judges,
back,
the deadly, parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangsters.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about sleek, parroting puppet gangsters who try and push vaccines into your bloodstream. My very special guest is Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. Kath, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Benny.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had a question in the chat room, and I addressed this earlier, about cancer viruses and the vaccines. Do you know anything about this? Kathy, are there? Hello? Okay, Kathy, we've just had some problems with the phones. This is the last segment, so we've only got about 12 minutes in it. So if you just quickly hang up and ring straight back, and we'll bring you right back up again instantaneously, because I really want to hear what you know about cancer viruses in the vaccines and what have you, because I'm not terribly well informed about it, frankly, and I'd like to defer to your expertise. So if you just hang up and call back, that would be lovely. I hate technical difficulties. I really do. But anyway, we're talking about in the chat room about me coming to the States. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit anxious about the concept. You know, much like a holiday maker in 1939 might be a little bit concerned about their planned trip to Berlin, you know, for a beer festival or something amid the peppers, please. And if your nose happens to be a little bit big, you might find yourself in some real trouble. Some Nazi goose-stepping kind of scum going around there. TSA agents, oh my God, oh my God. See, if anything's bad for U.S. tourism, I'm pretty sure that it's child thirsty pedophiles groping your junk when you enter. And if that's not bad enough, we'll irradiate you too. But anyway, Kath is back, and I wanted to talk about the cancer viruses and the vaccine. So if you know anything about them, go for your life.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I was going to say that, you know, the first instances of cancer viruses in the vaccines were the polio vaccines, which were cultured on monkey kidneys. And then I stopped myself and had a think while I was calling you back and said to myself, well, that might be the first well-documented instance, but certainly not the first instance, because there were massive problems with people getting tumours in the site of smallpox vaccines. Dating back to the late 19th and early 20th centuries. In some old books, you can see people with absolutely revolting tumours. They look like sort of massive, sort of fungating sarcomas. You can only imagine how painful they were. And in fact, you know, I remember seeing a caption with one image which specifically said that the person consented to have their photograph taken as a warning to others about the dangers of vaccination and was basically hoping that they would die soon because they were in such agony from this enormous tumour on the growing out of their arm at the vaccine site. So, you know, that was a warning right back then that going and injecting sort of a nasty concoction of, you know, calf lymph and live viruses, and who knows what else was in those early smallpox vaccines, well, could cause, you know, tumours, and, you know, not just benign ones, but cancerous ones with a fatal outcome. But it didn't actually stop vaccine manufacturers from deciding that it's a good idea to be using animal tissue as a culture medium for vaccines. When they started developing polio vaccines, they were using the kidneys from African green monkeys. And it wasn't exclusively African green monkeys. They used other monkeys' kidneys as well. And in fact, I can't remember which country it was, but there were so many monkeys that were captured and you know, rounded up into big holding cages and chucked on, would have been ships in those days, and exported so that they you know, could be killed. And their, you know, their kidney tissue used in vaccine production, that a country stopped the export of monkeys because they were concerned about decimation of the monkey population. A very astute scientist, whose name was Bernice Eddy, was in charge of vaccine safety. I can't remember the company that she was working for, and became concerned about the viruses in the monkeys' kidneys. And one of them was called SB40, which stands for Simian Virus 40, which in itself is sort of alarming because it means it's the 40th monkey virus that actually discovered. And they knew, I can't remember if it was the late 50s or the early 60s, that injecting SB40 into hamsters caused the hamsters to develop tumours. And in New Zealand, unfortunately, I think it was the early 60s, a large batch of polio vaccine that had been manufactured in Canada that was known to be contaminated with SB40 was bought by the then Department of Health for use in the New Zealand population in the mass vaccination campaign. And they actually did this even though the chief virologist for the Department of Health at the time said, don't do it, it's contaminated, it's not safe. You know, the bureaucrats, you know, knowing better than anybody else. Problem is they got a good deal, I suppose. It was probably cheap because the Canadians wouldn't use it themselves. It wasn't licensed in Canada. So they probably got it sort of off the back of the truck, so to speak. It got used in the New Zealand population, a mass vaccination program, as I said before, and we now have a sort of a veritable cancer epidemic in New Zealand, unfortunately, and...
Yeah, it was 1 in 2 last time I checked.
The last figures I saw were 1 in 3, but then I haven't actually looked into incidence rates for several years, so, I mean, you could well be right. I mean, certainly 1 in 3 is too high anyway. I mean, it is horrendous.
I think it came up to... lifetime risk. I think it raised up to 1 in 2 within the last 2 to 3 years, I think. Right. And it seems very evident to me because I know so many people who are starting to get cancer, and they seem to be getting cancer at younger and younger and younger ages.
Well, that's true. I mean, our cancer rates in children have been gradually increasing for years. Children... I mean,
on that point... On that point, we have a question in from the chat room about some kind of retrovirus back in the 90s, which hurt a bunch of kids' intestines. I don't know if you know anything about that.
No, I don't.
All right.
There are some porcine viruses derived from pigs in the rotavirus vaccine, but I don't remember whether or not they are retroviruses. I definitely wouldn't.
Wait a second. He actually does say rotavirus. I read it wrong.
The rotavirus vaccine.
That's
been contaminated with porcine viruses. And it's an interesting story what actually happened with those vaccines. First of all, I can't remember which manufacturer it was, but it was discovered that there was a porcine virus in their vaccine, and the vaccine got pulled from the market. And then they discovered a porcine virus in the competitor's rotavirus vaccine. We're talking about in the US here. And you'd think that if they pulled one rotavirus vaccine from the market because it's contaminated with the porcine virus, when they found the other virus, the rotavirus vaccine was contaminated, they'd pull that too. But they didn't. What they did was put them both back on the market and say, oh, there's no evidence that being injected with a vaccine that contains porcine viruses does any harm. Well, you know, I mean, that is the state of, the non-science that informs, sort of the vaccination policy. That's quite typical, really, you know. It's a bit like saying, you know, what the Department of Health did here, you know, Probably what they said to the virologist, sort of imagining here is, well, we know it causes tumours in hamsters, but there's no evidence it causes tumours in people, they probably said. And, of course, you know, it took, a few decades to get the sort of the molecular biological evidence in terms of being able to isolate fragments of the SB40 genome, the viral genome, from people suffering from various sorts of tumours and cancers, and that includes some types of childhood leukemia, some of the brain tumours that, together with leukemia, are the most common forms of cancer in children. It includes mesothelioma, which, of course, is always put down to asbestos, but you know, may not be 100% due to asbestos. You know, the virus may be an important cofactor. It's very difficult to know, you know, how much blame to assign to each factor. And also includes osteosarcoma, which is the very aggressive bone cancer. And in some cases, it can be treated successfully with a chemotherapy, but usually only after the affected limb has been amputated. So you're talking about, you know, not only having to go through very rigorous chemotherapy, which works, you know, if the disease is caught early in a majority of cases, but, you know, survival is by no means assured, and you can be significantly handicapped if you do survive.
Indeed. Kath, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show, and this is very unfortunate because I think we could talk about this for hours, and in fact I'd like to have you on. And I would like to have you on again sometime, and I don't know, maybe we'll hook up soon enough and do something on video or something like that, because there's a lot of elements to vaccines and there's such little real information out there for people to sink their teeth into. And I just want to thank you very much for giving us an hour of your valuable magazine editing time to give us a little bit of info here.
You're very welcome, Vinny. And if people want, are you there? I'm still on. If people want,
we don't have any time, unfortunately. NoForcedVaccines.org, NoForcedVaccines.org, NoForcedVaccines.org for Catherine Smith's work. Thank you very much, Kath, and we'll see you again sometime, folks.